Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Samadhi maggo asamadhi kumago ti. That's to set the ambience of this first talk of the 20th meditation retreat, Wassa, the rains retreat at Bodhinyana Monastery. And that phrase, gatha, from the suttas, from the Buddha's words, is one of my favorites, samadhi maggo. That samadhi is a path, asamadhi kumago, that no samadhi is wrong path. And this is not just a saying of the suttas, it's very close to my heart, very close to the way I see the practice towards enlightenment. It's also very close to the way that our tradition, who we call the Kuba Ajahns, the teachers of our lineage, have always taught. And you know that those of you who have been to the forest monasteries of Northeast Thailand know that they were set up to provide solitude, to provide simplicity, to provide support for the practice of samadhi. And not only is that in accordance with the forest tradition, it's also in accordance with the Buddhist tradition, who said in the reflection on using the requisites that one's lodgings are for patisalana kamyatang, for enjoying solitude. We do this in according to the Buddha's instructions so that we can develop samadhi. Samadhi is the result of the Eightfold Path, sama samadhi, and the requisites of samadhi, the causes for getting samadhi, are the other factors of the Eightfold Path, the first seven. In those first seven factors of the Eightfold Path, living in a monastery such as this, we have got a very good standard of virtue, of precepts. Even though that sometimes that we fail and we may utter wrong speech, speech of harm and hurt to other beings, or we may harbour wrong thoughts, thoughts of ill will, please know that if you break your external precepts, or that you allow thoughts of ill will, of cruelty, of sensory desire to arise in your mind, that you are blocking off any possibility to develop states of samadhi. We have to start off with a purity of lifestyle. And that purity of lifestyle is a purity of body, speech, and mind. So in this monastery, no matter what anyone says to you, you don't need to spoil your chance of samadhi by fighting back. No matter if people think unkind thoughts to you, you do not need to think unkind thoughts back. That just stops you having an opportunity to develop samadhi. You do not need to think lustful thoughts here in this monastery. With samanas, people who've left the world, anagarikas, you should have left behind all that stuff. So you have a purity of mind, a purity of speech, and a purity of bodily conduct, which is the requisites for samadhi. All of you who come here have close enough to right view to understand the path towards samadhi. And that path is the renunciation of letting go. The right thought of the Eightfold Path starts off with nekamma sankappa, Nekama Sankalpa means thoughts of renouncing. Basically, thoughts of letting go. And you can just stop there for a while and understand the path into samadhi. We have to develop that letting go in our minds, letting go in our speech, letting go in our actions, because that is the path to samadhi. Samadhi are no more than stages of letting go. The jhanas are particularly deep states of letting go. Never think you can get attached to states of letting go, no more than you can be imprisoned by freedom. Letting go is letting go. It is going the opposite direction of attachments, which is why that as we let go more and more in our practice towards enlightenment, these jhanas are just simply things which happen. Samadhi is part of the process. It's part of the journey, and it's a good sign that the journey is coming close to the goal. We let go more and more, and that becomes our path into meditation. That letting go has to be accompanied by the other factors which I haven't mentioned yet of the Eightfold Path, namely energy or effort and mindfulness. The effort, the energy, is a very difficult one for us to manage, because so often that we put forth energy but put it in the wrong spot, and it just gives rise to restlessness. It just gives rise to more craving, more desire, which eventually leads to frustration, disappointment, and a feeling that no matter how hard one tries, one just cannot achieve this. It's just that the energy, the effort, has been put in the wrong place. As you know, that this path is for people who have energy, who put forth effort in their practice. But it's also for those with wisdom who know where that effort should be applied. That effort should be applied in sitting a lot and walking a lot. The effort should be applied in sleeping little, but not too little. In eating little, but not too little. The effort should be applied in restraining the grosser of the defilements, like wanting to talk, wanting to associate with others, wanting to go out into the world. That needs the energy to restrain the mind from doing that. And you all know what it's like when you start a retreat. The tendency of the mind, the inclination of the mind, is to indulge in external things, because we've been doing that most of the year. Now we're going the opposite direction. And so we have to put up energy to restrain at first. Just like teaching a horse. The horse is not used to being trained. It's not used to the saddle, not used to the bridle, not used to the person on its back. But after a while, it becomes accustomed to being trained. After a while, the mind becomes accustomed to solitude, becomes accustomed to speaking little, to eating little, to talking little. It becomes accustomed to sitting a lot and walking a lot. So please bear with the first few days or weeks of a retreat as you get into the groove of solitude and meditation. Also, I've made strong points recently that when one is sitting, one has put forth the energy to actually sit down on that cushion, on that stool, on that chair where one meditates. When one's put forth the effort to get out onto the walking paths. Here in this monastery, the walking paths for many of you are right outside your front door, to lessen the amount of energy it takes actually to get out there and walk. When you actually get out there on the walking meditation path, then the energy has to go in to what I call the knowing, and not to be given at all to that thing which we call the doer. That's a profound insight into the way of meditation. As you know, for many years I've been making this very strong distinction between the knower and the doer, which you can actually see in the Pali Suttas. It was there in the Sabhasava Sutra last night, which I read out. the knower and the doer, the two parts of the mind. The knower, the passive, the awareness, the alertness, and the doer, which you can recognize by the thinking, by the planning, by the managing, by the controlling, by the liking, by the not liking, all of that which is how the mind reacts to the object set before it. The mind knows that object, that's knowing, mindfulness, awareness, and then the mind reacts to it, which is the doing mind. Put all the energy into the knowing mind, into awareness, into mindfulness, strong energy, energy upon energy upon energy, and take it away from the doer. So when you walk, you're walking just to walk. You're sitting just to sit. You're not trying to do something, get somewhere, manage, control, because that is just putting forth energy into places where restlessness and desire will actually grow. You put it into awareness. It is a type of letting go, but it's a focused letting go. You're letting go of the doer. You're not letting go of the knower. When a person lets go of both at the same time, they let go of the doer and they let go of the knower. That's where they fall into dullness, even into sleep. And that's not the path of meditation. We let go of the doer and allow all the energy to flow 100% into the knowing, into the awareness, without doing anything. This is actually setting up the mindfulness in the right place. As one sets up that mindfulness in the right place, there are stages of meditation which you can recognize. And these stages begin with you let go of all past and all future. You come to present moment awareness. Sometimes you've heard me talk about this many, many times, but please never think that any of these basic instructions are not for you. Don't be proud and think that you don't need to listen to this. The present moment awareness is a very profound state. And if each one of you could just get that far and be present moment, all of your problems, most of the problems, most of the difficulties in your life will just disappear right there. So much dukkha is bound up with memories of the past. He said that, she did that. It's gone, the past. Do not linger on the past. Don't care what happened even a moment ago, let alone the whole history. There's sayings in the Dhammapada. He hurt me, he abused me, he cheated me. Hatred never ceases with somebody who thinks like that, because you're just dwelling in the past. Let go of that past. Had a good meditation, a wonderful time. Wasn't that beautiful? Let go of that. That's just dwelling in the past. And expectations of the future. This is what I want to do in my meditation. This is what I want to get. This is my goal for the rains retreat. Don't get stuck into that sort of blind alley of desire and craving. If you had to go anticipating, planning, making goals for yourself, sometimes you just get too far from the present moment. Instead of paying attention to now, you're hoping for the future. So you absolutely, 100%, let go of all past and future. You know the tricks of the mind, which tend to dress up the past and the future as if it was the present. You know those tricks. You don't allow the mind to go anywhere. It just stays at home in the present moment. That is a form of letting go. All doing is about moving from the present moment to somewhere else. Look at the five hindrances. The first hindrance of sensory desire is wanting something else. rather than what's in the present moment. It's a force which takes you away from now, out of attraction to somewhere else. The ill will takes you away from the present moment because you're not satisfied with it. It's a repulsion from the present moment. Again, it stops you being here. Desire and ill will, parts of the doing mind. When you don't do anything, desire and ill will just cannot arise. That's why you come to the present moment, because there's no force to take you away from now. The very reason why the future and the past exist has been undermined, has been settled until it ceases and disappears. You're in the present moment because you're not doing anything, and from that not doing, there's no desire, no ill will. Sloth and torpor, that's just the natural result of putting too much energy into the desire and ill will. The more you have desires, the more you feed those desires, the more you want to sleep, the tireder you will feel. Too much doing causes the tiredness. Too much ill will just drains the energy from the mind. Sure, you feel good while you have ill will, but afterwards you have to pay back that energy in dullness and sleepiness. So don't waste your energies with ill will and desire, and then sloth and torpor will not come to you. A lot of times we can overcome that sloth and torpor by making sure those first two hindrances don't sap our energies. The restlessness of the mind, the fourth hindrance, again that takes you away. Takes you away from the present moment. In the present moment, if you really stay with the present moment, there's not much restlessness there. There's not much sensory desire. There's not much ill will. There's not much sloth and torpor. And don't have any doubt. Understand these teachings. Get the knowledge, the instructions, ask the questions. So you're quite sure of this path which leads into enlightenment. Get into that present moment, that beautiful, strong mindfulness. Go deep into that present moment until the mind shuts up. If your mind is still thinking, if there's still words appearing in your mind, and still decisions being articulated in the mind, descriptions being made, it means you're not fully in the present moment yet. If you're fully in the present moment, perfectly in the present moment, the mind stops speaking. Thoughts freeze out of the mind. The perfect present moment is so empty of thought that that by itself becomes a marvelous stage of meditation. Simply, there's no time to think. There's no time to make a description. There's no time to make a plan because, even as John Lennon said, life is what happens when you're busy thinking of something else. The moment happens when you're talking about it. And you're just watching the words rather than experiencing the reality. When you're fully with the reality of now, the mind can't say anything at all. So get right into that present moment, the beautiful silence of the mind. And then you find you're putting lots and lots of energy into just knowing and not doing anything. When there's no words arising in the mind, there's no measuring going on, no describing going on. And when there's no measuring or describing going on, how can there be any desires formulated? To have a desire, there has to be a comparison between what you're experiencing and what you want to experience. Desire is a comparison between being here and being over there. When the mind is right in the present moment and silent, those things just cannot come up. You're subduing the defilements, you're subduing the hindrances, you're subduing that which causes movement in the mind. So please spend a long time practicing present moment awareness and silence. And you can do that anywhere. On your walking path, on your sitting path, on the toilet while you're eating, before you go to sleep, when you wake up first thing. In the little chores we have to do, sweeping our huts, doing the chores around the monastery. It's a practice which can be done at any time in this monastery, present moment awareness and silence, except if you have to be the senior monk and you have to talk to people. Or you have to answer the phone. Other than that, you can be silent. By practicing and cultivating the present moment awareness and silence, you're building up the energy of mindfulness, the energy of the mind. And as I keep saying again and again, that energy of the mind, when it builds up, becomes joy, becomes happiness, becomes a niramisa sukha. When you become comfortable in that silence, in that present moment awareness, when that's comfortable and the mind gets used to it, that comfort becomes the starting point, the seed of all the joys and happinesses which come in meditation. If you go off into the breath too soon without that degree of joy, you'll find you're watching the breath but with effort, with force, with control. And you find that it will never really take off. You can hold the mind on the breath. But that force means there's not really enough letting go. The breath doesn't soften and become the most beautiful breath you've ever experienced. If you build up lots of present moment awareness and silence, first of all, until it's joyful, until mindfulness becomes very strong, and is brightness in the mind, then you go and take up the breath. Not with controlling, not with force, but just as if you're inviting an old friend into your mind. When the mind is that still and peaceful and joyful, it's so easy to watch the breath, because you're not controlling or forcing it. You're just being with it. Because you put in a lot of time in subduing the doing mind, when you watch the breath, the mind just receives it and watches it passively without trying to control it at all. The breath is long, the breath is short, the breath is soft, the breath is rough. The mind just knows that without trying to manipulate it. Even if it's an uncomfortable breath, because the mind doesn't judge. It cannot know it's uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is another comparison. Going back in the past when the breath was somehow different. In the present moment, if you're with the breath, all breaths are the same. Beyond any comparison or measuring. If you have not enough present moment awareness and silence, you start watching the breath and it's not good enough for you. You want it to be better. The mind is still working, still controlling, still wants to do something, get somewhere. There's too much activity there. That's why you can't hold the breath. The present moment awareness and silence, really, really strong, and then invite the breath in. And it's just so easy. Because you're not measuring. This breath is just breath, that's all. Comes in, goes out, comes in, goes out. And you're able to be still with that breath. Not to move that breath, not to push that breath. Because of the stillness of the mind, the breath usually becomes still also. And when that breath starts to become still, because you put a lot of effort already into the knowing, because the mind is already bright, when the breath becomes still, you don't get lost in that bland equanimity. You don't get lost in that stillness which is very nice but hasn't got enough energy. You don't get stuck in that plateau of peaceful breath, but you don't go any further. By putting more energy and effort into those first stages, when you take up the breath, the mind is already bright. So you watch the breath with a bright mind, a mind of joy, because it's got energy into the mindfulness. Not only do you see the breath very, very clearly, you see the minutiae of the breath, the small details of the breath, but also this joy in what you're watching. You've heard me say before, you may have experienced it for yourself, after great meditations, whether you're watching a brick in the wall of your hut, or whether you're watching a leaf on a tree of a bush outside, or whether you're watching the stars outside, they appear just so beautiful, so wonderful, so full of joy. Even the trash can in your hut has just so many beautiful bits of paper in it. Whatever you look at looks beautiful. Why? Because the mind is beautiful. You need that sort of mind to be able to watch the breath. A mind which has got so much energy into the knowing, so much energy into mindfulness, then it watches the breath becomes the beautiful breath. You know that I've even proposed to call a book The Beautiful Breath, simply because it's just so important a concept to developing meditation in this monastery. To get to the stage by this practice where you can see the breath and it's the most beautiful thing. When you have the joy along with the breath, then you're getting somewhere. The rest is pretty easy. You're just watching the breath. Come in, going out, and look so beautiful, so lovely. You remember the present moment awareness and the silence. You don't allow the mind just to go fuzzy and go off into the future. Wow, it's a beautiful breath now, I'm going to get somewhere now. Don't go anticipating again. Don't go lingering. Just be perfectly in the present moment where desire and ill will just cannot arise. You don't worry about the next moment. You're doing fine. You give yourself to the breath without expecting anything in return. You don't expect nimittas to come up. If you do, that's just manipulation again, wanting. You've gone off into the future. You don't expect jhanas. All expectation and all memories of the past are all gone because you're in the present moment. Which is why sometimes, even I, when I get to the beautiful breath, I have to just stop and pay attention, that I'm focusing closely into the present moment. Sometimes I've given a simile, like the mind becomes a bit out of focus, like a camera or a telescope becomes out of focus sometimes. And you just need just to slightly adjust the lens, so the focus is sharp again, perfectly focused in the present moment while you're with the beautiful breath. And when I do that, the meditation really starts to take off again. Because all desires and ill will come from the past or the future. When there's no concept left of past and future. When you're with the beautiful breath and focused in the moment, right in the moment. You can't say anything, you can't do anything, you're in the moment. And the beautiful breath really begins to shine and become brilliant. In the moment the breath starts to change. It starts to change into the difference between, as I've been telling a few people earlier today, the difference between how the body experiences the breath through the sense of physical touch and the difference between the way the mind experiences the breath through the sixth sense, not the mind. There's a difference there. And that difference is usually perceived as the breath becoming subtle, very different than the breath which you knew through the sense of touch. Which is why that it is not really relevant to know where that breath is perceived. It is perceived eventually through the mind. Let go of the body as soon as possible. Don't worry whether you're watching the breath at the tip of the nose, up the top of the nose, in the middle of the nose, in the throat, wherever, it does not matter. Watch the breath where it is, anywhere in the body. And then just let go of the perception of the location of the breath. So you just know the breath, and haven't got any idea where it is. You're supposed to be mindful of the breath, not mindful of the body. When the breath starts to become disembodied that way, when the touch breath disappears and becomes a mind breath, there's a subtler object which makes it more easy for more energy to go into the mindfulness. That's where that experience should start to become incredibly joyful. It's where the piti sukha comes from. It's a piti sukha which is not just coming from letting go of doing, but it's coming from letting go of the body. These are all stages of letting go. First, letting go of time, the past and future. Letting go of speech. Letting go of body. The more you let go, the more happiness and bliss comes, because all the energy goes into a smaller and smaller spot. It's not wasted on all these stupid things. It all goes into the knowing, this small part of the knowing. Not the knowing through the body, but all the knowing through the mind. Just in this one sense. This is why the mind starts to become very, very bright. The piti sukha gets huge. Because at this spot that nimittas should come up. If nimittas don't come up, it means there's not enough energy in the knowing. The mind is not bright enough. You've been doing too much. Craving too much, wanting too much, talking too much, thinking too much, moving too much, restless too much. You haven't subdued the hindrances. The nature when the hindrances, nature of the mind when the hindrances disappear, is the mind becomes very, very bright. These are called upakilesas of the mind. Almost like stains, defilements of the mind, which stop it being bright. That's why that even in the Anguttara, you know that very famous phrase, Pabhasarang etang jitang. This mind is brilliant when it is not, when it hasn't got these kilesas which actually come onto it. When those defilements aren't there, when the hindrances aren't there, the mind is bright, prabhasara. And this is what you experience in the meditation. If the mind isn't bright yet, it must mean there's kilesas there, defilements there. Check them out, find out what's going on. And make sure that they are subdued, restrained, given up, thrown away. Through wisdom, not through willpower. And when they are given up, their nimittas come up as a matter of course. The brilliant mind, the Pabhasara Jitta. And this is where you start playing around with the mind. And at this much, it's about time each one of you really got into these nimittas and really started enjoying some of the benefits of monastic life. Each one of you have worked so hard, given so much. This is your payoff. Please claim that payoff during this meditation retreat. Claim your Pabhasara Jitta by following these instructions. Lots and lots of energy into the knowing. No energy at all into the doing. Mindfulness, full mindfulness, clear mindfulness, more mindfulness, more present moment. Focus present moment, not just when you're on the sitting meditation stool, not when you're on the walking path, when you come into the hall, when you're going back again, when you're listening to a talk, be present. When you go to sleep at night, you don't worry about what you're going to do when you're asleep. All you're doing is being present as your head is by the pillow. Always now, now, now. When you're eating, just this spoon of food which you're putting in your mouth right now. And don't even think of the next spoon until you've chewed and swallowed the one which is in your mouth now. Don't be like the person who's got one or two spoons waiting in line to go into the throat. Already planned what you're going to eat next and the one after. Be present. In that present moment, in that silence, you are building up the energies of the mind. You're making that mind Prabhasara, beautiful, brilliant. So when you do this practice, it just goes so easily. Present moment awareness and silence. All results of letting go. Don't try and make present moment. Present moment is what happens when you stop making things, when you stop doing things. If you make and try and control, you'll never be able to stay in the present moment. It will be the present moment you want to get to in the next moment, but never now. You'd always be talking about silence, never experiencing it. You'd always be trying to force the breath, rather than being the breath. All of these stages come from letting go, from not trying to do things, but all energy and effort just going into bare awareness, silent knowing, just a passive observer. And it just happens naturally. This is what happens to the mind. It's the law of nature. It's nothing to do with you. This is why it's a path, a well-worn path, an ancient path, which many beings have gone along over so many centuries, not in just this Buddha era, but previous Buddha ages as well. It's not a path which is Mahayana, Theravada, Vajrayana or anything. It's just the Eightfold Path. It belongs to everybody. It belongs to you. Claim that path. Walk that path. Experience the results of that path. Enjoy yourselves. When those blisses come up, have courage. Don't be afraid. When a mind becomes powerful, it becomes huge. That's why that sometimes when people see devas, they're in awe, afraid, tremble at the deva power. In meditation, you're coming close to that deva power inside your own mind. It's very common for people to tremble at the bliss of the mind. To people to become awestruck, to become frozen. Please, don't be afraid. This is part of the path. People become afraid at this point because of their sense of self. This is where you find how much you've attached to your sense of you and what you own. The fear is directly in proportion to how much you misunderstand about the sense of self. That's why that we teach non-self, we talk about non-self, we read suttas about non-self. We keep on saying the body's not yours, the will's not yours, your possessions aren't yours, your family aren't yours, the monastery's not yours, the kitchen's not yours, your books aren't yours, you've got nothing there. Even your mind is not yours. The more we talk like that, the more we contemplate like that, the more we see that as a truth, the more we'll be able to let this process happen. It is an impersonal process, and it's the sense of self which always gets in the way and stops it succeeding. It's the sense of self which stops you letting go. The sense of self which controls. The sense of self which causes the restlessness. Because it wants to assert itself. I think, therefore I am, said Descartes. Being, thinking, so close together. When we stop thinking, it's as if we don't exist anymore. Some of our self has gone. Our intellect. They used to say that knowing a person's name in magic was power over that person. We're giving up power. Power over names, power over measuring, power over control. that sort of power, that control, we're abandoning. That hurts the sense of self. The ego is dying in meditation. And sometimes the ego fights back. Come on, control a bit. Come on, you can do this. You can't do this. No one in this monastery can get enlightened. You have to give up this one, this person. The path is, but not the person who walks upon it. Enlightenment is, but not the person who enters it. Or something like that from the Visuddhimagga. Beautiful little poem. So there's no one here who experiences jhana. No person. It's just part of the process. It just happens. You're just sitting here when you start disappearing, then the jhanas come. The more you try, the more effort you put into doing, the more controlling, the harder it's going to be for you. So you just sit here and you just don't compare even. That's why my first meditation teacher gave some brilliant advice. There's no such thing as a bad meditation. No such thing as a good meditation either. All this bad and goodness, comparing, that's going off into past and future again. It's just this meditation, that's all. There's this moment, this quietness. How can you give it a name? All the names are just conventional reality. You know they don't have much meaning. You can see that. So why do you get lost in these names? Because you want to control, that's why. Because of the sense of self, ego, me, mine. I'm going to do this meditation. This is my meditation, my jhanas. It's me becoming enlightened. You have to give up that. So the more that you can contemplate non-self during this retreat, the easier it will be for you. The less that you will stop, the less you will try to control. Letting go will become more natural to you. It becomes just what happens when there's no one there. When there's no one there to pull the levers or press the buttons, you just let go, that's what happens. Nothing else can happen. How can it happen? Or how can anything else happen when there's no one there? Just letting go occurs. There's no movement to the past or the future. Just present moment. It's what there's always been. It's the only truth. Past and future become ridiculous in meditation. Even so, comparing last meditation, next meditation, which is the best meditation, taking notes, doesn't make any sense. All those notes, that's just perceptions, memories of what happened. It's not the full story. What's the point of taking notes? What's the point of trying to compare? You're just using memory again, which is so well known to be unreliable. Wanting to get into jhanas when you don't know what jhanas are. What are you wanting? You're wanting just a fantasy, a phantom. Just let go. Don't even want anything. This nimitta business. Just stop even giving it a name. Just see what happens when you let go. When all the energy goes into knowing. There's none left for the doing. Things start to slow down and stop. They slow down and stop all by themselves. That was Buddha's advice to Angulimala. Stop, Angulimala. Stop. Stop all this doing. Stop all this thinking. Stop all this going off into the future and the past and back into the present, off into the future, past, 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 future, past, past, future, past, 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 future, past. All this way that we just allow the mind just to wander back and forth in the samsara which we create from our sense of self. And we see there's no self. The more we see there's no self, the more we see there's no controller. The word is just cause and effect playing out in front of our consciousness. We're not doing this. Nothing's doing this. Nothing doing. Stopping doing. Ceasing of craving. Things stop. Time stops. Come to the present moment. Thinking stops. The breath stops. Body stops. nimittas arise, then nimittas stop, mind stops, samsara ends. This is just a natural process, the ending of things. And it's there for you during this retreat. It's there for you right now. All one needs to do is to be wise, remember the instructions, and don't allow this stupid sense of self to get in the way. Don't try and make it happen. Just let it happen. Don't put any effort into this sense of self. Don't reinforce the self. Don't sort of give the ego any space to actually to assert its control over your meditation. Don't go judging, because that's all part of the self. It's called conceit. I am better, I am worse, I am the same. This meditation is better, this meditation is worse, this meditation is the same. It's conceit. Coming from the sense of self. This is good, this is bad, this is the same. Conceit coming from the self. Future, past, present, that's conceit. Coming from the self. Self is doing this. Playing around. Making suffering for you. Let go of all that. And there's no self. There's nothing to do. Nothing to achieve. Nowhere to go. Nowhere you come from. Just an empty process, that's all. The emptiness. Empty of doing. Empty of going. Empty of comparing. Empty of complaining. Just let go. And that letting go, stillness, silence. Pick out the breath, so easy. Breath gets beautiful because all the energy, day after day, week after week, has gone into the knowing. Mindfulness becomes bright. Whatever you see, whatever you taste, if you want beautiful food during this rains retreat, get into deep meditation and the grossest of food will taste so delicious. That's because the mind is bright. It won't give rise to craving because the mind is bright. It'll be more powerful than the craving coming from the sense of self. Your kuti, your body, just all disappears. You get the beautiful, bright nimittas of the mind. This is how you really brighten up and illuminate sort of your mind. And you get so strong, so beautiful, that the sense of self hasn't got a chance anymore. You've gone so far because you've given up so much. And it becomes so plain and obvious. Just give up a little bit more, and it'll be even better. Give up the last bit, and it'll be the best of all. Nibbana paramang sukham, Nibbana the highest happiness. This is the marketing of Nibbana. Jhana is the market strategy of Nibbana. You get so close to Nibbana in the jhanas that you can actually sense just a little bit more. You get everything you ever wanted. Peace, freedom, calmness, Nibbana. This is what one sees through the jhanas. So you get to these beautiful nimittas and you're on the edge. Don't control, let go. The beautiful nimittas become so powerful they just pull you in despite all of your doing and controlling, your fear or your excitement. It just pulls you in because the nimitta gets just too strong. Irresistible, powerful, the magnet which just pulls you. And with it, in those jhanas, so much of the self dies. More times you go into jhana, just it's like the sense of self getting old age and sickness. It just weakens it so much. Just like bashing it to bits until it gets so sickly. It's just on the edge of dying. The sense of self just becomes mortally wounded at stream winning. It becomes just on its last gasp at anagami. And the arahat is breathed its last. It's dead once and for all. The sense of self, this house builder, this thing which stops you getting into meditation, the things which creates all this doing and complaining, this arguments, this ill will, not being able to sleep at night, whatever it is causes the problems in your life, the cause has been seen, uprooted. Kina bija avirulhi chanda, as the Ratna Sutta says. The seed has been destroyed. It's no longer able to grow anymore. Craving, the chanda, is no longer to grow because there's no place where it can grow anymore. You've cut off the root, the sense of self. No one in here. Never was, but you thought there was. You perceived there was. You cognized there was. And that's why you can never get into deep meditation. Suspend that belief. Suspend that perception. Suspend that thought out of faith in the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha. Go into this meditation out of faith in the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. This is the path of the Aryas. This is what the Buddha experienced. You go into the footprints of the Buddha, as it says in the Mahāhatipadopama Sutta, that favourite sutta of mine. Every time you get a jhana, you're standing in the footprints of the Buddha. You are literally being where the Buddha was. Not in the Vulture's Peak, not in the Jeta Grove, not in Bodh Gaya, in the jhanas. Those are the four places of pilgrimage for a monk, and I missed out one, sorry. Kusinara. No, I missed out two. Sarnath as well. Those are the four places of pilgrimage which the Aryas go to. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. Those are the four places where the Buddha stood. Stood in his mind. Where non-self is so clear. Get there long enough, you can't miss it. When you see it, you can get to those places even easier next time. When you know it, perceive it, every moment, every hour, every day, then there's nothing between you and those states of letting go. That's why, for the Aryas, the jhanas become without difficulty, with ease, because the obstacles have gone. Just let go. The attachments, the seed, the striving, the struggle is over. How many years have you strived and struggled? How many lifetimes? You die and the striving and the struggling is not over yet. You've got to do it all over again. Just the strife of life. Struggling. Trying to get what you want, always meaning what you don't like, the pain, the difficulty, the struggle of existence again and again and again. This is where all that strife finds an ending. It's finishing. You have that in front of you during this meditation retreat. Please take it. Don't give up the opportunity. So rare it comes. Each one of you, because of your merits, you've come to this monastery, to this retreat. You've got everything which it takes. Just need just to use that wisdom power. Put all the willpower into just knowing. Take it away from doing. Have courage in the Buddha's teachings. Have inspiration from the Aryas you've known, you've seen, you've heard. They were like you. You will be like them. That way this retreat would not be a waste. And all that hard work, all that building, all that office work, all that management work, all that cooking, all that cleaning, will not be a waste of time. And all of the dana from our lay supporters, all the donations of food, will be of great benefit because they'll be given to Aryans. This is what we need in this monastery. It's what we need in this world. So in this meditation retreat, go for it. Don't mess around. You have all the opportunity. It's right there in front of you. Just pluck the apple from the tree. That's what our Ajahn Charles used to say. He said he's planted the orchard. He said the fruit is on the trees. Remember Ajahn Charles saying this in my first years. He said, all you need to do, you monks, you don't need to do anything. Just sit there, just pick the apples off the trees. Ajahn Chah said he's done all the work. He was the Arya. He's done the work. That's easy for you guys. Just do nothing. Let go of time. Let go of the words. Let go of diversity to go into the breath. All energy into the knowing, so the breath becomes the most beautiful thing. You have energy when you let go of the breath. And that beauty, that energy, means nimittas arise. Powerful, beautiful nimittas. Just blow any last vestige of self away. You enter the jhanas. That blows your mind completely. You've got some uttri manusa dhamma in your monastic life. Blissed out for days. Deep, powerful states. You realize all coming from letting go. No self in there. Realize there ain't no self at all. Streamlining comes as a result of the jhanas. Building up even further as a result of that great insight. And just the whole of samsara starts to unwind, unravel. Cut it off at the roots and the tree starts to die. Like dieback. Starts off at the roots and just goes back and gets to the very trunk. And everything just dies. And just the elements are all that's left. Nibbana has happened. This is your last life. Done what needs to be done. Become one of the brilliant arahats in the world. So this is the first talk of this range retreat. I hope the next one is better.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho.